The most important gift that we give to God in prayer is time. Because when you give God time in prayer, you can't do anything else. It's a full gift. And whether it's distracted prayer or consoling prayer, you have sacrificed a part of your life.
Praise be Jesus Christ, and welcome to another episode of Carmelcast. Carmelcast is a production of ICS Publications. For more information, you can visit our website at www.icspublications.org. My name is Brother John Mary of Jesus Crucified, and I'm joined today by Father Mark Foley. We're very glad to have you with us, Father Mark. Father Mark is one of our authors. He has written several of our books, which you can find on our website, icspublications.org. In particular, I would recommend his study edition of Story of a Soul. It has the entire text of St. Therese, of Story of a Soul, but then has some commentary to kind of walk you through the text and help you to understand what it is that Therese is saying. And he also has some other commentaries on the works of St. John of the Cross and other books as well. So I encourage you to check those out when you get a chance. We're back again talking about prayer. For this entire season, we're really focusing on prayer because Pope Francis has named this year, 2024, a year of prayer. And in this episode in particular, we're going to turn and talk about some of the difficulties that we all experience in prayer, especially through the wisdom of our sister St. Therese of the Little Flower. To dive in, Father Mark, I wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
with no warning here.
Okay.
If you had to give one piece of advice to people about prayer, what do you think? Just some practical advice. What do you think you would say?
Show up.
Show up.
And I'm say that tongue in cheek, but I'm serious in the sense that in the Way of Perfection, Teresa says the most important gift that we give to God in prayer is time. Because when you give God time in prayer, you can't do anything else. It's a full gift. And whether it's distracted prayer or consoling prayer, you have sacrificed a part of your life.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's very great advice. I appreciate that. And it's a good lead-in, too, to what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
The idea that prayer is not always easy.
No.
We experience a lot of difficulties. And I think often when we read about the prayer of the saints, we can get the wrong impression of what even their prayer was like.
Yeah.
I mean, can you give some examples of some of our own saints who have struggled with their times of prayer?
Well, St. Teresa of Avila, for example, she says that she found it so difficult to keep this, be in chapel in prayer, that she would literally hit the hourglass to make it go faster.
Mm-hmm.
St. Therese had some real problems, and we'll be talking about that, her dryness, but she had a genius of what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. And that's really why I think it's good that we turn to Therese here, because when we read, even when we read Story of a Soul, some people can get the wrong idea about what Therese's prayer was like. But if you look carefully at the text, you get another picture of what it is that St. Therese is actually saying.
Yeah.
And she has a lot of wisdom for us because we experience some of the same difficulties that she does.
Can I give a recommendation on reading St. Therese?
Yes, definitely.
I'm trying to write another book on St. Therese, and after reading her for decades, I'm beginning to see things I've never seen before.
Mm.
And what's made the difference is I'm reading it out loud, and I'm reading it slowly. It's like a completely different text.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Even when I've given some retreats and conferences to people, I've read sections of Therese out loud to them, and it seems like it's written to be read that way. Because when I read it out in that way, it's really engaging, and like you said, I think it brings out different things.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. I was thinking maybe we could look at a few of the difficulties that Therese had in prayer, and then because I think that there are difficulties that we all experience as well, and maybe we could just look at what she says about her own experience and the wisdom that she gives to us when it comes to facing those difficulties. So maybe first to start with distractions. This is something that I think many of us struggle with in prayer, and Therese herself certainly struggled with. One thing I recall that she says is when she's talking about praying the rosary.
Oh, yeah.
This is on page 242.
I read this within the context of Carmelite spirituality, especially St. John of the Cross. Mm-hmm. She says, "I'm ashamed to admit it. The recitation of the rosary is more difficult for me than the wearing of an instrument of penance." Now, people look at that and go, wow. But the next line is very revelatory. Mm-hmm. "I feel that I said this very poorly. I force myself in vain to meditate on the mysteries of the rosary. I don't succeed in fixing my mind on them." And there's a couple other passages like this. Mm-hmm. I think what the problem here with treasing the rosary, it's difficult to meditate, it's difficult to fix your mind on it. I think what she's referring to is this transition from meditation to contemplation, you know, John of the Cross deals with. And we can't go through the whole three signs, but if I could sum them up succinctly would be, I can't meditate. I don't want to meditate. All I want to do is rest in God's presence. And I think John says, when a person, in fact, he uses the same word, when a person tries to fix their mind on a meditation when John is, when God is calling them, it's like grinding, and they just don't, it's like wearing a instrument of penance. Mm. So I think this is what's happening here.
Yeah, so you basically, it sounds like what you're saying is that Therese's inability to focus on the mysteries of the rosary isn't necessarily a sign that she's doing something wrong.
No. In fact, I think it's a sign that something is happening is right, that God is calling her. I've had people come in before in direction, and they've talked about this difficulty of saying the rosary. They've been saying it for years, and they get to a point where they don't want to say it anymore, and they feel that they have to, because if I don't, I'm letting down the Blessed Virgin. And the advice I usually give is I ask them, have you ever seen an icon of Mary holding the child? And usually they do. And when she's holding the child, she's always pointing one hand at Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I say, this is symbolic of Mary's role in salvation history. Yeah. She leads us to Jesus. And I say, have you ever considered that when you get to a point halfway through the rosary that you just want to rest in God's presence, that you are doing honor to our Blessed Mother because she's done her job. She's led you to Jesus, and she wants you to be quiet in his presence, you know. So this has helped some people, you know.
Yeah, I think the hard thing, though, is how do you discern, you know, in that moment, if I'm praying the rosary and I just don't feel like praying it anymore, I'm struggling with the rosary, how do I discern whether this is a chance for me to make a sacrifice and to keep praying, when is this an invitation perhaps to slow down?
Yeah, I would say, that. In fact, that was the word I was going to use. Not necessarily stop, but slow down. Mm. You know, it's like the nun that St. Teresa asked how she prayed, and she says, I just do vocal prayer. And she says, could you say something about that? She says, well, I just say an Our Father, but often it would take her just an hour to get through, because she would say Our Father, and she'd stop for 5 minutes, then go on. I like to think of a bird in flight, and the wind is under its wings, and it's just staying aloft, and you're kind of in the presence of God, and when kind of the wind dies down and you begin to get distracted, you just flap your wings. You just kind of say one or two words to stay in place. Teresa uses an image, St. Teresa, of that there's a small flame you want to keep lit, and you don't want to blow too hard, but you have to blow, and just very gently from time to time. Everyone has to find that own their own rhythm within them of what keeps them in the presence of God. John of the Cross, one of the things that John of the Cross says about contemplation is awareness of God is prayer. Mm-hmm. So do that which keeps you aware of God during your time of prayer. That's probably the most important thing.
Right. And so these this flapping of your wings or this like blowing on the flame. These are also kind of tools then to, like you said, to help us keep our attention. So when we're faced with distractions, right. For example, yeah. These can be tools to kind of recenter us.
Yeah, and basically the flapping of the wings or the blowing, those are just metaphors for saying a word or so, or a phrase or what have you. What is very helpful to keep you in the presence of God.
I always wondered when I looked over in the chapel at you and I saw you going like this, what you were doing.
All right. Caught, neck, get that off.
That's good.
Yeah.
Connected to this issue is, I mean, sometimes we have difficulties focusing or distractions within our minds.
Yeah.
Other times we have distractions that are coming from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great story from St. Therese. Actually, I don't know exactly what page it's on, but I'm sure you know it well. Is there's the she goes to prayer and there's the clicking sound of. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that episode from St. Therese?
Yeah, basically, Therese is in chapel. And there's a nun in the back of her, and there's a clicking sound. Basically, we don't know exactly what it was, whether she was hitting her teeth. I think it was false dentures, and let me tell you why. Because in the text, she says it was like two clamshells coming together. That's what I think it was. And Therese said that she tried her best to really block out this sign, and the more she tried, the worse it got. In fact, she said she felt sweat coming down. And all of a sudden, what she did was, instead of trying to block it out, she gently focused on it. And then when she focused on the sound, she says it became like a symphony. And there's, I think, a basic fact here is that we give power to the things that we resist. For example, if I told you for the next 10 seconds, don't think of pink elephants, what would you be thinking of?
Pink elephants.
That's right, because we give power to the things we give. It makes it worse, but when we can basically be present to it, it actually sounds different. For example, if there are sounds outside, don't try to block them out. That causes distractions. Now here's the tricky part. When distractions come, you don't want to entertain them, but if you try to block them out, it makes them worse. So what do you do? The cloud of unknowing has a wonderful image where it says, look over the shoulders of distractions. And it's basically, I always have the image of, you're at Green Bay Packer game, okay? And you're way, way, way up in the stadium, and halfway down is one of a Green Bay Packer fan with one of these big cheese heads on. And you're trying to look at the game, but it's out of the corner of your eye, and you just, it's impossible not to see it. You've got to get used to focusing on the game, and this will always be in peripheral vision. And not worry about it.
Mm.
It's going to be there, and you just have to live with it. And that's part of the mortification of, I think, of our spirits. St. John of the Cross has a wonderful passage at the very end of chapter 12 of Book 1 of the Ascent of Mount Carmel, where he talks about what he calls first movements. Mm. And first movements are those images and memories that are always coming to our conscious mind. And he speaks about like the seven capital sins, which are not sins in the sense of guilt, but they're inclinations towards that behavior. He says, what our job is doing our best to simply focus on God. And he says, these first movements towards anger, lust, pride, envy, they can give rise to all the vices, but they can give rise to all the virtues. For example, let's say you're at prayer for half an hour and you have 100 distractions. And within that half an hour, you're distracted and you gently bring yourself back to God's presence. You're distracted, you bring yourself back to God's presence. You would probably interpret that as, oh, I had a horrible half hour of prayer. If you told that to John at the cross, he says, you did fantastic, because you made 100 acts of the will, you made 100 acts of love. Spiritually speaking, you are better now than before, even though you feel that you're worse because you were distracted. You have to interpret your experience from a spiritual perspective and not a psychological perspective.
Yeah, and so in that sense, the distractions actually become these great opportunities for grace.
Exactly.
And it's the very thing that's really helping us to grow as well, grow in virtue.
And even outside of prayer, Trez gives another example which is similar. It's wash day, and the nun next to her is slamming the blanket or what have you with the wet paddle and sprinkling her, and she's getting so angry until she relaxes and she focuses on the feelings of the drops as if they're caressing her. And all of a sudden, the experience changes. The anger towards this nun goes away.
It's interesting because I think sometimes we can be frustrated or even angry at ourselves about our predispositions to be frustrated or angry or something like that. But I often see them in these cases as they're almost like a built-in, like natural warning sign for us to or alert system to tell us like, hey, here's your chance to practice virtue. When I feel my blood boil, when I have these like natural, like physical reactions to something of irritation, like rather than being upset about it or being hard on myself for that first movement, I can be thankful for the fact that I have this physical reaction because it's warning me like, hey, this is your chance right here to practice virtue.
This is your opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, St. Francis de Sales says, the hardest act of patience is being patient with your impatience. Mm. So you've got many opportunities a day, you know, to practice a really good type of patience. Huh?
Right. Yeah. So, and then I guess turning this back then to distractions in prayer, then when this comes, like you said, it's like we can kind of acknowledge, look over the shoulder of, not try so much to fight or resist, but to acknowledge and then turn our attention back to to Christ,
exactly.
Our attention back to God.
And always, John of the Cross uses the word over, always doing it gently. Mm. Because if you do it forcefully, the energy of the force actually is counteractive. It goes into the distraction itself.
Right. And something I noticed John of the Cross points out a lot is he tends to say that the disruption of your peace is like one of the greatest obstacles to union with God.
That's right.
And so whenever you're doing something like that, that'll cause you to disrupt your peace. If you're reacting violently, it's pulling you away from God.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to make a distinction between voluntary distractions and involuntary distractions. I mean, obviously, there can be distractions that we really focus on and we are culpable of. There are other distractions. It's impossible not to be distracted. I mean, and I would say this especially toward people like married people with children. Mm. You know, there are other responsibility. There's that great line in Henry IV, Part 2, where Henry says, uneasy lies the head that wears a crown. That when you have a responsibility, it's you sometimes you can't sleep, and it's always on the back of your mind is a preoccupation. That's not a distraction. Can you learn, this is a hard thing for life, when you're preoccupied, can you be present to people? That's a great act of love.
Right.
You can't get rid of the preoccupation, but you can choose not to allow it to dominate your life.
Mm-hmm. And this is the great distinction that St. Teresa makes between her imagination and like the more interior part of her soul.
Yes,
this idea that my imagination can be, in some sense, distracted, can be turning towards things.
That's right.
And yet I can still be present to God in the time of prayer.
Yeah. And there's that image in, I think it's in The Way, where she calls the imagination the mad woman of the house. Mm. And this mad woman is running around the house and looking in the windows. And she says, don't get up from prayer and run out and try to push her away, because then you'll be focusing on her. You have to learn to sit in the house quietly and allow this woman to go around and drive you crazy. In other words, you sit in the eye of the hurricane. Mm. Because you can't stop those distractions.
Right. Yeah, and maybe just to finish this discussion with something like really practical. One thing that I like to do when a distraction comes to my mind, because often my distractions are rooted in something I remember that I need to do,
yeah,
or that I should have done.
Yeah.
I often have a little piece of paper next to me in prayer, and I just jot down one word or two words so I can remember to do that later.
Yeah.
And I find when it's on the paper, then I can let it go and move on and you know, turn back to prayer.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any practical things that you recommend for prayer or things that you do, particularly when it comes to distractions.
I think it depends upon the day. For example, I know that I can make my hour of prayer in the chapel in the morning. It's harder in the evening because I've been working all day. And sometimes I find, since I'm sitting all day, either seeing people or up in my office, sometimes just gently walking back and forth helps to relieve my body, which relieves my mind. And also sometimes some things that calm me down, or for example, if I'm walking over in the cemetery, I have a couple of things that I say to myself over and over again, poems that I've learned growing up. One is from Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. The boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, and all that beauty, all that wealth e'er gave, awaits alike the inevitable hour. The paths of glory lead but to the grave. That gives me peace, that the things I worry about, and I look at the tombstones, you know, it's just, it puts things in perspective, and that brings me into the presence of God. So I would say, memorize certain things, a line from scripture, a line of poetry, a line of something that helps you, that will draw your mind in and center you. And it's going to be different for other people. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, so when you flap your wings, make sure it fits who you are.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, no, that's great advice. Thank you. Let's turn now to another difficulty that St. Therese experienced in prayer, and that's drowsiness.
Ah.
She talks about how she struggled staying awake in prayer. There's a good passage for this on page 165.
Yeah. Now, these two passages here are very, very profound. I think people pass them over. You know, she feels there's an aridity. And often when we feel there's a dryness and aridity, all we want to do is get rid of it. She's using her imagination and her will in a remarkable way here. She pictures herself in a boat with Jesus, and Jesus is asleep. And she says, and he basically says, you know, Jesus has had a really rough day. Rarely do souls allow him to sleep peacefully within them. Jesus is so fatigued with always having to take the initiative and attend to others' needs. So what she does is, she says, you know, I can make a choice of waking him up and get rid of the aridity, or I'm going to let him sleep. Mm-hmm. And that's an act of love. And you really love somebody, you're willing to bear the aridity. So she's making something that she experiences passively as if she's choosing it and as an act of love. Mm-hmm. So she's making aridity. She's relating to it in such a way by an image that is an act of love.
Yeah.
Another thing in this same passage where she speaks about falling asleep, she says for 7 years she fell asleep during prayer and her Thanksgiving after communion. And she says, you know, I should be desolate for having slept for 7 years during my hours of prayer, my Thanksgiving after communion. I mean, we're talking about probably like 80% of her time as a nun.
She didn't live in the monastery for very long.
No.
So 7 years is quite a bit.
Yeah. But she says, I'm not desolate. I remember that little children are as pleasing to their parents when they are asleep as well as when they are wide awake. I think what's really important here is she's using an image of God to correct. Why would she be desolate? Because she's probably having an image of God that God is displeased with her. So she's taken another image of God, that God is like a loving parent who smiles upon a child who's asleep. So it's a transformation of her image of God, but also a transformation of how she feels about herself that she's fallen asleep. You know why she fell asleep?
She was tired.
She was tired. There was no act of the will involved. Mm-hmm. You know, I always know in chapel when I have fallen asleep during prayer, you know how? There's a drool mark right here, you know, right there, you know. So it happens all the time, you know. So, yeah, she was very, very realistic,
mm-hmm. you know. Right. Yeah, it reminds me of that passage from the psalm that we say, I forget which number it is, but it says, in vain is your earlier rising, you're going later to rest, you who toil for the bread you eat when he pours his gifts on his beloved.
That's
while
right.
they slumber.
While they slumber.
Yeah. So this, and this seems to be this same inspiration that St. Therese had, is that that our falling asleep is not necessarily a sign that we're doing something wrong or that or that God's not working. Like what we have to have a weak understanding of who God is and his power think that our falling asleep is somehow limiting his ability to work within us.
Yeah. Elizabeth Browning has a variation of that, and it's just like a comish is, the Lord gives his beloved sleep. Mm. That's the gift.
Yeah, the rest itself is the gift.
The rest itself is a gift. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that brings up another image that Therese brings in here is after this idea of the parent looking lovingly on their sleeping child, she says, I remember too that when they perform operations, doctors put their patients to sleep. And so that's another way that we can kind of shift our mindset here is that in some sense, my being unconscious is pulling down the barriers that
that's
I am
right.
actively putting up to God.
Yeah, yeah. And I would just say to the audience here, be very, very careful if you go to your director or you go to your confessor. Don't confess, I fell asleep. Because the more you do that, the more you'll believe there's something wrong with it. You know, even St. John of the Cross says, don't confess first movements.
Right.
Don't do that. There was no act of the will involved, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. And then at the same time, I think, you know, the other side of this coin, too, is we have to do what we can to try to remain attentive during or awake during prayer, you know, sleep well at night if we can and, you know, pray in a posture that's going to help us to stay awake.
Yeah.
You know, we do what we can. And yet at the same time, if we fall asleep, then there's we shouldn't beat ourselves up about that.
And I'd like to speak to the audience out here. How old are you now?
33.
I'm 75. And trust me, and get a lot of people out here know this. When you get older, your sleep patterns change. And you wake up 2-3 times in the middle of the night, you can't get back to sleep, and you're tired during the day. You can't do often when you're older what you can do younger. Mm. And I think one of the fallacies that people labor under is, what's wrong with me? I used to be able to. Yeah, but you were 40 years younger.
Mm.
And I think that you have to take human nature into consideration. I mean, Francis de Sales says, people that try to make themselves angels end up being beasts.
Mm.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's turn to one more difficulty, which we alluded to before, but this is when it comes to aridity and prayer. There's a passage here on page 175.
Let's put this within context. She's speaking about insights in prayer here.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, at the ages of 17 and 18, I had no other spiritual nourishment than St. John of the Cross. But now, she's writing this book, this is 4 years later. She's been praying for 4 years in the monastery. Now, if I open a book composed by a spiritual author, even the most beautiful, the most touching book, I feel my heart contract immediately and I read without understanding. And my mind comes to a standstill without the capacity of meditating. I think we're dealing with the same thing as meditative prayer. You open up, you want to do some spiritual reading, and you say, you get a couple of sentences, and you just don't want to go on.
Mm.
Just like if you're saying a vocal prayer, you get to a point where you don't want to go on. And I think there's something parallel here that St. Teresa is speaking about. I find as I get older, I read less and less. As I read out loud, I might get through a half a paragraph, then the next day go through the same thing. I don't feel an obligation I have to finish a book anymore. Read what is helpful and often just go back over the same book. And if a passage is still speaking to you, just stay with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's a shift here for Therese too. There's this realization that she's maybe not getting something out of prayer or out of the time of reading like she used to, and she has to come to terms with that reality. And I think that's often our experience of when we find ourselves faced with aridity where we used to feel consolation or have insights, we can think that we can find ourselves struggling with that. And yet the reality is that perhaps it's revealing that we were praying not for a totally pure reason before.
Sure.
We were praying because it made us feel good gave us good insights. And yet here there's this awareness that's being taken away, and there's a peace that comes with even the dryness in prayer.
Yeah. And also, practically speaking, as you grow older, as you read, often the insights are basically the same, and there's just a variation on a theme, you know, that you've heard it before.
Yeah.
That's just a reality,
mm-hmm.
you know. Also, she says down below, Jesus has no need of books or teachers to instruct souls. He teaches without the noise of words. See, a lot of words, too much verbiage can be noisy, mm-hmm. okay? Never have I heard him speak, but I feel that he's within me at each moment. He is guiding and inspiring me in what I must say and what I must do. Let me give you an example of that out of Therese. Remember the incident where the nun in the back of her is making the noise? And Therese in that passage says, I was tempted to turn around and give her that look, you know, that she would stop. And she says, halfway around, she says, I just felt that it would be better if I said nothing and not disturb her peace. And I think we've all had this experience where you're in a conversation and you're about to say something, but something inside of you says, don't. You didn't think about it. It's just that Jesus was instructing you without the power of words what to say and what not to say. Have you ever labeled that as God's presence in you, guiding you, guiding your tongue? It just happens. You don't do anything, you know?
Mm.
So I think this is what Therese is talking about, that the inspirations now don't come so much from books, but they come from the inside out,
mm-hmm.
that Jesus is the one who inspires
right.
in daily life.
Yeah, so there's a deeper inspiration there. It's coming from a deeper place. And so, I mean, maybe that can console some people who used to enjoy going to prayer and feel like they got a lot out of it, and then now they sit down and prayer can feel like it's a drag, and that they're not having the great insights or the good feelings that they did before. It's with Therese kind of acknowledging the fact that Jesus is still working and he's perhaps speaking to my soul in this silence.
Yeah. And what are the insights for? Mm. Are they simply to make you feel good? Or the insights are, as you go around the day, they help you to love.
Mm.
That's what, you know, Jesus, it's like in chapter 5 of book 2 of The Dark Knight, when John of the Cross defines the Dark Knight, he says, the Dark Knight is an inflow of God into the soul, it's grace, which teaches us secretly in the perfection of love without us doing anything or knowing how it happens. If you're really attentive to God's quiet voice within you, he will teach you what to say and what not to say, and what to do and what not to do. That's what insight is for,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we can love.
Yeah.
Knowledge always has to end in love.
Right. I'm seeing a theme in kind of all of these topics that we're talking about, mm-hmm. between distractions, drowsiness, yeah. and dryness in prayer.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like a lot of it is acceptance.
Acceptance, absolutely. And that you don't judge your spiritual life by your emotions. Mm. And that's through all the Carmelite saints.
Right.
You know, when St. Teresa speaking about the four waters, and one passage when she speaks about the water as consolation, she says, the flowers, the virtues, can grow without the water. It's not necessary. It's always union of wills.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's always a tendency, right, after the time of prayer to try to analyze or judge or rank, like, how good that time of prayer was.
I know. You know, even St. Teresa says, towards the very end of the Interior Castle, she speaks about these mystical experiences. And she asks the question about, are they necessary for holiness? And she says, there are some people that God gives these great graces to, not because they're holy, but because if they didn't get them, they'd fall away. And there's others, because they're very strong in virtue, God never gives it to them because they don't need them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't judge a person's holiness by their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if, for example, I saw Father Pierre Giorgio who's sitting over there levitating down the hall, the only thing I know is he's levitating down the hall. I don't know. I can't judge whether it's a sign of his holiness or not. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how do we assess our prayer then? Well, I mean, I think one thing you mentioned, the very first thing you mentioned is, do we show up?
And St. Teresa says in her autobiography, you can only judge the quality of prayer outside your prayer. She says, are the flowers growing, the virtues? If during the day you find yourself more open and loving towards your neighbor, more responsible for the things that God wants you to do, then everything's going fine in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer is not some isolated monad away, separated from the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah, and that's what we just mentioned from Therese, too, is that she would experience the lights less so in the during the time of prayer.
That's right.
And more so just throughout her day.
St. Teresa says exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
These kind of slight inspirations of the Holy Spirit working within her.
Yeah.
And her responding to those.
Yeah.
That's good. Maybe we can close then by talking about, there's one passage I want to look at where Therese kind of gives a definition of prayer, I think.
Okay.
So like what prayer was to her.
Okay.
And that's on page 242. She says, for me, prayer is an aspiration of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It is a simple glance directed to heaven. It is a cry of gratitude and love in the midst of trial as well as joy.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, it is something great, supernatural, which expands my soul and unites me to Jesus.
Yeah.
And this passage is actually, it's quoted in the Catechism on the section on prayer, right at the beginning of the mm-hmm. section on prayer, they yeah. quote this passage of Therese. So I don't know if you had any insights yeah. from Therese's definition there.
Yeah, you speak out of your heart. What's there? St. Teresa in the Way of Perfection, she says, you know, when you are sad, see Jesus alone in the garden. When you're happy, think of Jesus as risen. So Teresa begins with our emotions and kind of attach that to some image. And I think what Therese is saying is something similar. I begin with what I feel. For me, prayer is an aspiration of the heart. It is simply a glance directed towards heaven. There's no words. It's a glance. It's like looking at an icon.
Mm.
Yeah. It's very, very simple.
Yeah.
It's not, and again, this is a word that comes up often in Therese, not to force myself. When we try to force ourselves to get insights, or force ourselves to pray, or force ourselves to say the rosary, that force should be a red light.
Mm.
We're doing something that is not coming from who we are.
Yeah, something we've talked about a lot in this season so far, and I think it's true of Christian prayer, but maybe especially emphasized in when it comes to the Carmelite saints, Carmelite spirituality, is freedom.
Yeah.
There's a real freedom that comes in prayer. It's not something that we do out of compulsion or... it's not so constrained, I guess. There should be this flexibility and freedom that allows the Holy Spirit to be the one leading the time of prayer.
Well, that's the thing where John of the Cross says that you have to follow God's lead. The difference between active prayer and passive prayer is when you cross over, we have to follow God's lead, where God leads us. And no two people pray the same. I mean, our personalities are different. Our psyches are different. What we like to meditate upon is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, St. Teresa, for example, she's talking about meditating upon the passions, and she says, that's good, but she says, you know, there are certain souls, they can't do that, nor should they, because of their temperament, they get too depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to know yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the face of, you know, again, when we face those difficulties in prayer, it seems like something that kind of summarizes, something that Therese writes in Story of a Soul even, is she says that we should profit from our miseries.
That's right.
Profit from our miseries. So rather than beating ourselves up, rather than being hard on ourselves or trying to analyze.
There's a passage in there where she speaks about there, isn't it?
On page 172 is where she quotes that. Because there she talks about... you know, all of this, however, does not prevent both distractions and sleepiness from visiting me.
No.
She still has those things, and yet she finds a way to be happy and to profit from her miseries.
You know, for example, during distractions and sleepiness, you know, and the Thanksgiving, which I make so badly, I make a resolution to be thankful throughout the rest of the day. Now, I suspect with Trez, especially her scrupulosity, being distracted and sleepy and falling asleep, she probably felt guilty. So what she seems to be doing is, I made a resolution to be thankful. She turned guilt into gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if I fell asleep, if I'm grateful for during the day, I'm praying.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really turning this into a virtue.
Yeah.
She's profiting by it.
Right. And it's the same, I mean, this is the same same reaction we see in her Christmas grace, where she was, you know, upset and she wanted to just run up the stairs and cry, and yet she made this conscious choice to overcome this strong emotion and to choose to love in the midst of it.
That's right. And I think the last phrase you use is important, in the midst of it. The emotion didn't go away, but she loved in spite of how she felt, whether it's she felt hurt, what happened, or feeling empty during prayer. That's an emotion that you deal with.
Right. And so when we face distraction, when we face drowsiness, when we face these difficulties in prayer, we can make that same conscious choice.
Exactly.
Rather than choosing despair or choosing self-hate, we can choose to be thankful. We can choose to love.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's really the sign that our fruit, the sign that our prayer is working. That's the fruit of the prayer.
Yeah, and I think also what happens in the midst of it, in everything, is you grow in humility, that you're not your own savior. You can't save yourself. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the life, at the end of your life, you're still going to get distracted. You're still going to fall asleep during prayer. You're still going to have temptations. But as long as we're doing our best.
And showing up.
And that's right, showing up. Right. That's what Woody Allen says, 80% of life is showing up. That's true.
Well, thank you so much again for joining us, Father Mark.
You're welcome. You're
and a lot of what we read from today comes from Story of a Soul, which is the autobiography of St. Therese. And this book, as well as a study edition, which was helped prepared by Father Mark, you can buy on our website at icspublications.org.
But buy this one. I get royalties from it. Okay?
Right. Okay.
Okay.
So Father Mark recommends the one that he gets money for. So no. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and God bless you.
Okay. God bless.